the goal and its means. This is the basic question of our life. What is the goal? What are we here for? What are we called to do here? Why are we here? What are we supposed to accomplish? So the goals, the ordinary goals our parents and our teachers explain to us very easily. How we're supposed to live in this world, how to train ourselves to manage in this universe. In all things having to do with the physical reality we're faced with and surrounded by, and in all things that have to do with the intellectual aspect of our lives, thought, and how to deal with different complex situations. Thought and psychology, all of that we have tremendous preparation for. Parents give us a great deal, and teachers and mentors in so many ways teach us all about these various things. And then, of course, there is this other side of our nature, not the physical and not the intellectual or emotional. Those sides, those aspects of our being, we have done a great deal to take care of. But the background of it all, the source of it all, the need for it all, the reason for it all, that remains for us to work out. And of course, there are many spiritual teachers, spiritual traditions that give us additional ways to face that existential problem. So the physical and the psychological, of course, they always need work. They can always be refined. We can always do better, definitely. But the thing that on which those really depend, on which those rest, is the spiritual foundation. What is the origin of it all? What is the meaning of it all? What is the purpose of it all? What are we supposed to be here to accomplish? Suppose everything goes very well in terms of physical development, in terms of psychological and emotional development. Everything goes very well. We're always, no matter how much we try to ignore it, at some point we are faced with the existential problem. What are we really here to do? I mean, it's obvious that we're supposed to accomplish something. Everything else seems to be following a certain logic, a certain procedure. We can understand the reasons for many things. We may not agree with them. We may feel that things are not going in the right way, but the basic framework we understand. We may want to direct the chariot in which our life is moving, or the social life, or the national life even. We may want to direct those things. We may not appreciate or approve of so many things, but we're equipped with means to at least approach those problems. There are ways of tackling all these things. But there's one area where there is uncertainty, there is difficulty, there is real controversy about the very fundamentals. And that is the spiritual realm. Spiritually speaking, even if everything goes in the very smoothest, very best possible way, what are we supposed to accomplish here? Even the best results can be met with the question, now what? What is the basic framework in which all of this universe appears to us? What is the foundation upon which everything is built? What is the reality of all the things that we experience? Those questions, there's a great deal of disagreement about, more so than about anything else. And of course, the disagreements on this plane are reflected in the other planes also. They are reflected in the social plane and the emotional plane and the physical plane. They are the fundamental basis for all of this. And that is the realm of religion and spirituality. And religions have not been able to be convincingly, to bring a convincing solution in the way it appears to us. Every field requires its experts, every field requires its technicians who have probed everything to its depths and understand the field. In the physical sciences, certainly in psychology, in all these areas, every area has its own expert, its own level of expertise, its own way of handling, of approaching its deepest problems. So in religion, we also have to have something like that. What is going to answer our deepest questions? And what is the deepest question? So today I wanted to concentrate on one of the Upanishads called the Katha Upanishad. Because all the Upanishads deal with that same problem, but this one was one of Swami Vivekananda's favorite quotations and a favorite the Upanishads for his for approaching his philosophy. And so, but everything is is stated here in such a strong and such a powerful way that it can. There's an immediacy about the answers that are given. But we must caution ourselves about one thing. Namely that whatever we read, whatever we hear, are just words until we put them into practice. Even to hear it, the Upanishad says, even to hear it is not granted to many. Even to hear the results of these profound spiritual thoughts is not granted to many. And many who hear these profound thoughts are not able to really put them into practice. And those who put them into practice, of them, only a few are able to reach the goal. So, of course, that's immediate discouragement. So why should we bother? I mean, we've got so many other things to keep ourselves occupied. That's not only just on our level that these thoughts come. Even for advanced, very advanced spiritual souls, that type of thought comes. Sri Ramakrishna's spiritual descendant, spiritual son, as it were, his divine mother showed him to Sri Ramakrishna, this will be your son. Oh, my son, am I going to have children? No, not your son in the ordinary sense, but in the spiritual sense, he will be your very own, you could say, the image of yourself. Swami Brahmananda, even he, in the early years of his association with Sri Ramakrishna, he felt discouraged, dejected, and angry at Sri Ramakrishna for that he wasn't, that he himself, Swami Brahmananda, who was not a monk at that time, that he was not able to, Sri Ramakrishna was not giving him his enough, he felt enough support, enough of a push forward, and so he got angry. He was massaging his feet as a constant, a frequent method of devotion between, in those days, those circumstances, between teacher and student. He got angry at Sri Ramakrishna because things were not fully developing to the extent that he wanted. He threw the bottle, there was a bottle of medicinal oil, he threw it on the ground and stalked out of there. So, it's not difficult to imagine that all of us can be in that same situation. What is all this spiritual advice? I've been coming to this Vedanta Society for untold years, and I don't feel I've advanced anywhere. I haven't developed anything. What are these people are all talking about these things, and nothing has come through to me. So you throw the bottle of teachings aside and stalk out of there. But Sri Ramakrishna looked at Swami Brahmananda as he was stalking out there, and he said, "No, he will come back. No problem. Nothing much, nothing fundamental is going to change." So we feel that how long are we going to have to attend these lectures of the Vedanta Society before something finally grows in us and we can reach those lofty heights that are spoken of in the books we're supposed to read? We read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and all these fantastic states are mentioned, and so naturally on occasion a certain dejection will come about, and that is quite natural. So that's why I mentioned Swami Brahmananda's case. It is not that we are failing in any sense. It's that there is a process that has to be gone through. There's an understanding that has to develop. There's a maturity that has to be reached. And it's not something that you can guarantee to occur in a certain period of time. The point is, if one feels that a certain set of thoughts, a certain set of teachings, a certain set of prescriptions for one's action, one's life, if one feels that those are true and correct in as far as we can evaluate them, that they make sense, that they lead us in the right direction, then if we simply give those things up, or if we put them aside, we'll pay attention to these things later. Right now I'm busy doing the things of this world. If we do it, if we approach it even that way, we're doing ourselves a grave injustice. Because the deepest things in our life have to grow. They are not going to appear to us fully matured in front of us. Even if the teacher as Sri Ramakrishna did for Swami Brahmananda and all his disciples. Even if the teacher shows the full-blown flower of spirituality of his own life, as indeed he did, it may not instantly be visible to the consciousness of the student. It is the idea, Holy Mother, Sri Ramakrishna's consort, made this point. If you're going in a train, if you're getting into a train in the evening and you fall asleep, and in the morning you wake up and you have no idea where you have come, and you feel that you haven't really, the train hasn't really reached its destination, and you get terribly upset. But until you know where you are, you have no right to evaluate that. You may, in fact, be just very within striking distance of your destination. It may not look like that, but the student is generally not able to evaluate his spiritual maturity. That is one of the, and in fact, that is in all the fields. If a person teaches another a particular science or a particular technique, a particular skill, the student is conspicuously unable to evaluate his own or her own skill or achievement of those teachings, embodiment of those teachings. There was a famous Indian musician, Ali Akbar Khan, who played for us here. He gave a concert during our 100th anniversary year, and he was considered an extremely outstanding Indian musician classical schools. He made this statement. His father gave him a title, Swara Raj, the king of Swara, the king of melody, the king of sound. His father, who was extremely famous musician in India, gave him that title. But when did he give him the title? Near the end of his life. Until then, he felt that his son, Ali Akbar Khan, had not quite reached the very epitome, had not quite reached the full development. But the son was extremely famous. He was playing all over enormously appreciated concerts. But the real ustad, the real expert, saw that there were still threads hanging there. It hadn't completely been achieved. And he used to say, after 10 years of intense practice on a musical instrument, you may be able to please yourself to a certain extent. After 20 years of intense practice on the instrument, you may be able to appeal to the audience or approve the audience. After 30 years of intense practice on the instrument, you may get the approval of your teacher. So we intrinsically, we are not able to judge our own spiritual development. We may be much, much farther than we imagine we are. On the other hand, we may have a lot more work to do, but for us to try to evaluate our spiritual development is very misleading. And it may cause us to do things like Swami Brahmananda throwing that bottle of medicinal oil down and stalking out of there, and Sri Ramakrishna watching him, smiling, saying, oh, he will come back, no problem. Because he understood where he was, and the student did not understand what the teacher was doing, what the teacher was doing for him. So, you may be just around the corner from a deeper understanding, from a deeper appreciation. So the important thing is to continue the road. You've started on a certain road. The important thing is to continue on it. Now, what is that trajectory? What is that thing that will indicate to us the goal and its means? What is it, the spiritual goal that we're trying to reach, that we're trying to understand? And in the Katha Upanishad, that is shown, that is, at the very beginning, is the question that's asked. And if we think about it, that question is the basic question of our life. All other questions are definitely subsidiary. The question is, he says, this is this is Nachiketa's third boon, which really forms the thread on which the whole Upanishad is woven. There is this doubt. Yeyam prete praita, the one who has gone, for those who have gone before. Yeyam prete vichikitsa. Vichikitsa is a doubt. There is this doubt for those who have gone before, for those who have died, who have passed away. Yeyam prete vichikitsa manushye. Astiti. Asti means it is. Asti iti, it is. Or that being, that reality who has gone off, who has passed away, it exists. Asti, it is. Some say. Others say, nayam asti. No, it does not exist. That entity which was here just a few minutes ago, which has now gone, what is the truth about that? Everything seemed to be fine. This person was living, had a great experience, life, full of enthusiasm, full of vigor. And suddenly, for some reason, that person passes away. Life is gone. Does this reality that was embodied in this person, does that being exist? Some say it exists. Others say it does not exist. It has passed away. It is gone. What is the truth of it? That is what Nachiketa is asking. And that is the basic question of our life. No matter how successful we are, no matter how fully accomplished we have become, everything has gone either exactly wonderfully the way we wanted, or everything has collapsed completely and we've been left with a mass of shards. Our life has been blasted into pieces, or our life has become the embodiment of success. When that entity that we call me or us or we or I, when that entity passes away, what has happened to all of that? In other words, we may have an enormously successful life. We may have accomplished so many things and people applaud and we have left a true legacy in this world. When we go away, what happens to that entity? That is the basic question of our life. Other things we can give physical answers to, we can give psychological answers to. Yes, his mother treated him in this way and that's why he's like that. So psychologically we have to apply this technique in order to bring him back to a state of balance. All these things are there. physical solutions are there for physical problems, psychological solutions for psychological problems. All these things are there. That's wonderful. Let us suppose we can solve all problems here. Then one day we will pass away. That is the final idea that we can never overcome. And what happens to that being who was involved in all these things and now has passed away? Where has that being gone? Is that reality still there? All the things that I sacrificed my whole life for, tremendous work that has been done, the tremendous achievements, what is? There's always that final question. Okay, eventually I know this entity is going to pass away. Does all this pass away? Or does anything remain? What is the truth about that? That is no matter how many other questions we have, no matter how many other solutions we try to talk about and we arrive at, always that last question remains. We may be successful or we may be only partially successful or not at all successful. But none of this matters at the very last moment. When that time comes, when we're about to, obviously the body is on its last moments, where do we stand? What has happened to all of this? What is the meaning of everything that has gone before? So much trauma has gone, so much glory may have come, so much of so many achievements may have passed. Everything comes down to that last moment. Okay, now what? So that is Nachiketa's question. That is our question. That is the basic question of our life. Everything else, it not only is subsidiary, but everything else can have a solution or an attempt at a solution. This cannot. There's no way. No one has managed to evade this. Of course, in our mythology, certain people have supposedly been given Chiranjeevi, certain people in mythology, they live forever. Some historical characters in our literature are said to live forever. But that's only, I think, six of them, perhaps a few more. Only six, and there are, 7 billion people in the world, so that's not a very high percentage. So it's not likely to happen to us, folks. We shouldn't imagine that we're going to be among those six who are going to live forever. And furthermore, even if we do get to be among those six, one of them was Ashwatthama, who was not did something not very good. And so the point is, do we want to live? Maybe we wouldn't want to live if we, considering some of the things we might have done. But nevertheless, that is the basic question of our life. What is this? At that final moment, what is the truth? Everything else, at that point, everything else becomes irrelevant. Everything else becomes imaginary. That one question remains. So, but where is our life spent? Our whole life spent of thinking other things. How to get good job, how to get good education, good job, good family, all of that, those are our questions. We're constantly busy with that. And we put off this last question about the end of life. We just simply put that off. But there comes a point when that question and that question alone faces us. Okay, we've reached that point. Now, what is the truth of it? Yes. Asti or nasti, does he exist or does he not exist? Is there existence or is there not existence? that last point, all other considerations totally disappear and only one question remains. So, now, what is the answer to that? Or what can be the approach to that? That is the question. So then comes the teaching of the Upanishad. And one of the first verses that is mentioned is the following: that from which the sun rises and that wherein it sets, in that all the gods are strung, all the gods are involved, and no one goes beyond that. Yatascho deiti suryaha, where ud eti ud e, where the sun arises. Suryaha, yatascho deiti suryo, astam yatra chagachati, where it goes to set. All the gods, tam devaha sarve, all the gods, arpitaha, all the gods are, that means all experiences are fastened onto that. Taduna tyeti kaschana, na kaschana, no one ati e, no one goes beyond that. That from which the sun rises and where it sets, all experiences are centered in that, and no one goes beyond it. So what does that indicate? It is like this. Our life is spent in examining the things that have appeared before us. Our life says very little about the source of everything. We are so busy looking at the experiences. We are so busy analyzing the experiences. We put very little emphasis on the source, on that from which these experiences come, and that into which they disappear. One of the best examples in the Upanishads is this one example where, as from a blazing fire, sparks in their thousands arise, and again subside into the fire. This illustration is given. In that way, all experiences arise from that one central consciousness and all disappear into it. So what does that mean? Scientifically, if you have a fire and the sparks come out of the fire, and the sparks go back into the fire, our attention is focused on the sparks. In other words, our attention is not focused on the source of all experience. Our attention is focused on the experiences themselves. And we have become experts on the experiences. For the sparks that come out of that fire, we analyze these sparks to the minutest degree. They have now been absolutely identified, their molecules, their atoms, there are protons, neutrons, electrons, they're this, they're that. We go down quarks now, they talk about vibrating strings, they talk about, to the very utmost, they have fully analyzed all the sparks that come out of the fire. And now we fully understand the sparks. But do we really understand the fundamental nature of it? No. For that, we have to examine the source from which everything comes. Because the source from which all these sparks arise is also the place where they set. So if we focus on the sparks, on their trajectories, how they go here and there, and how long the sparks remain blazing, and when they get extinguished, we learn all about the sparks, and it's wonderful, we understand a great deal. That is generally the emphasis of science. But where do the sparks come from? That area, namely the consciousness, human consciousness, the inner consciousness of all beings, that consciousness from which all these phenomena appear and into which they again disappear. When we wake up in the morning, the whole universe appears. Where has it been all night? At night, when we go to sleep, if we don't have dreams, every night we go to a certain state which we absolutely have to have every night, and if we don't have it, we feel terribly unhappy and we run for all sorts of medicines and tranquilizers and whatnot. That's a state of deep sleep. We demand every night that there be a state of unconsciousness when we are conscious of nothing. And that is central to our life. And without it, we can't manage. But what is that state? What is the nature of it? How do you describe it? No idea. Oh, you talk about rapid eye movements and this and that. But that's again looking at someone who's sleeping. What actually is the inner content of it? We don't know. Because by very definition, that state of deep sleep is a state in which we don't know anything. But it's the source of everything. So in the same sense, like we can, for the sparks coming out of a fire, if we concentrate entirely on the sparks, we don't concentrate on the source, which is also the place these sparks all fall back into the fire. We don't concentrate on the source. So this is only an example. It's not to be taken absolutely literally. I'm not saying that spiritual practice is exactly like that. It's only an analogy. But it is a very apt analogy, because from our inner consciousness, this whole universe appears. And into that inner consciousness, this whole universe disappears every night. But not only every night, at the end of life also, it disappears. So what is that from which everything comes and into which everything merges? That is Brahman. That is that reality when there's no further, everything has merged, names and forms and functions have disappeared, only the essence remains. That is what we have to study. That is what meditation approaches. And that is what is meant here in terms of, from this Katha Upanishad, that from which the sun rises and into which it again sets. That in that are all the gods, means all the functions are fastened, are fixed, and no one can go beyond that. In other words, that is the supreme reality. That consciousness from which all phenomena arise, and that consciousness which is the consciousness in which all manifestation disappears, that inner reality that we call Brahman, that we call Atman, the inner consciousness, from which our whole world within ourselves, that inner consciousness, from that this whole experience of life arises. And again, it disappears into it when we pass away. Now, we spend all of our time talking about the sparks that have come out of the fire. We spend all of our time in detail analyzing every spark and its history, and we catalog it in so many ways. In other words, all the phenomena of our life are very well analyzed, very well studied, very well examined. But that only is part of our existence. That's our physical and psychological existence. And it's important and it should be done. It's a very worthwhile thing to do. But one should not omit the basic thing. where do all these experiences come from, and into which they again merge? Where is that? What is that? What is the nature of that from which arises all experience, and into which all experience again dissolves? When a person dies, that manifestation that has characterized that person's life is ended, and that consciousness again goes back to its source, becomes one with the infinite reality, with the infinite consciousness. That is the reality that the scriptures talk about. That is the God of the universe. From God everything comes. By that divine reality everything is sustained, and into that everything again merges. What is that? That is the basic question. What is that from which all experience comes, within, from which our whole life comes? What is that which again sustains our whole life, sustains our existence? What is that again into which all of this experience dissolves? That is what the scriptures talk about. That is Brahman. That is that reality. So instead of focusing on the sparks and their wonderful trajectories, we focus on the fire, the source of everything, which is also that into which everything dissolves and disappears. Then the Upanishad talks, expresses it again, in that same idea, that same basic thought, it expresses in other ways also, the Katha Upanishad, which I'm referring to. Yadeveha tadamutra, what is iha, what is here indeed, that is also there. Yad amutra tadanviha, what is there, amutra tat, that also is iha, is here. What is here is there, what is there is here. Mrityoh samrityum apnoti, so mrityoh, from death, sa, he, she, it, mrityum, again, death, apnoti, achieves, attains. So from death to death one goes. Who is it who goes from death to death? Ya iha nana iva pasyati, who here, as it were, perceives multiplicity. Nana iva. Nana is multiplicity. Iva means as it were. So this multiplicity that we're seeing, the differences in all these sparks which we so delight in examining and in describing, those are insignificant. What is the essence, what is the reality, is the same. All these sparks come from the same fire, and they all merge back into the fire, and you cannot tell in essence that one is more representative of the fire than another. They are all representative of the same fire. So all manifestations, all experiences are the experiences of that reality. All of our experiences are experiences of God. There is nothing else to experience in this universe except God, the infinite, the eternal. All the sparks may be totally different shapes, different, maybe different pieces fly up, flying out of the fire. They're all different, but they're all the same as the fire. The essence of the spark is exactly the same as the essence of the fire. So the essence of each one of us is the same as the essence of the infinite and the eternal, the pure and the perfect, the essence of the divine reality. The essence of each one of us is that divinity, the spark of God within each one of us. That is what we have to emphasize. And of course, we can emphasize the multiplicity and the differences and all of that. Yes, for practical purposes, we can do that. But if we think that that's the fundamental reality and there's nothing more to be learned, then that is a problem. We're not really dealing with the reality of everything. So this is the basic process, that basic idea. Every experience is an experience, fundamentally an experience of God. That is, the God being the infinite, the eternal, the substratum of everything, the reality of everything, the essence of everything. Just like you have a set of gold ornaments. One is a ring, one is a bracelet, one is a necklace, but they're all made of gold. What is the essence of them all? What is the truth about all these ornaments? The gold is the truth. Well, what about the difference in name, form, and function? Those are all taken into account. Yes, you use them for different purposes, you call them by different names, and they have different functions. But what is the truth about them? The truth about them is that they're all gold. Gold is the truth. The rest is a matter of details. Same thing for all of us. The truth about each one of us is God, the infinite, the eternal, the all-pervading, whatever way you want to describe it, within us is an infinite light, an infinite awareness, an infinite consciousness, an infinite joy, Sat-Chit-Ananda. That is the heart, that is what we are. That is our nature. Our forms are different, our names are different, and our functions are different, but those are only trivial details. Not trivial in the practical sense, but in a fundamental sense, very trivial, just secondary. All these things being made of gold, you enjoy the fact that they're different. So we enjoy our various differences. That is fine. We see a beautiful mountain there, and then you see, something that is not so beautiful and all of that. You appreciate the one and I want to avoid the other. But that's true. The name, form, and function are different. But in essence, there's only divinity here. That is the statement that is made. In essence, that is the only reality, the fundamental truth. That is what the scriptures declare, and that is what we have to try to experience. Is that difficult to experience? Well, if you want all the bells and whistles, if you read, for instance, the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, he describes how his mind went in this, rose in this way, that way, to get the full, to get the full ride, the full weight. That is enormous. That is, no doubt, very rare to get that full-blown experience. But that, to understand, to appreciate, to actually experience the fact that there's only one reality here that is the essence of everything, the substratum of everything, that is not so difficult. Many people have written about it, and many people have intuited the possibility of its existence, and many people have seen a little twinge of it, like you're looking for a cat. Somewhere there's a cat here. I've seen it, I know it, and I want to make sure it goes away and doesn't bother us. You don't see it, you look for it everywhere. Suddenly you see just the flick of a tail going around the corner. That's all you need. That means that cat is really there. You'll catch it in time, but it's not an imaginary thing. In that same way, this spiritual reality can also be experienced as, you know, in such a way that you understand, yes, there is such a thing. The full-blown cat you may not have seen, that's all right, no problem. But you've seen a flick of its tail and you know that animal is there. And you also know that sooner or later you are going to catch the whole beast. So these are the issues that, you know, should be central to our life. And these are the issues which we need to resolve, that basic question: what happens to us when we die? At that moment of death where nothing else is of any significance, nothing else, everything else is definitely secondary. At that final moment, what is that? What is it that remains? What is it that, what is the foundation of everything that we have experienced? See, everything we experience is a manifestation of something. It's maybe a physical manifestation, psychological manifestation, emotional manifestation. So all of these things are different, the physical, the emotional, the psychological. That is our life. Those three things are our life. Now, what is it that is at the heart of that? What is it that's at the heart of our life? What is it that caused this existence to happen in the first place? What is that into which it is going? In other words, when the sun of our life rises and is full blown in midday and finally sets, where does it arise? From what does it arise? What is it that sustains us through our life? And what is the point at which the sun sets? What is it that into which it sets? That's why this verse is so wonderful and so crucial. Yatascho deiti suryo, that from which the sun, ud-i, means i, to go, ud, to go up, to arise, that from which the sun arises. Astam yatra cha gacchati. Gacchati means it goes. Astam, to set. That from which the sun of our life, the sun of our existence, that from which it arises, and that where it sets. Tam devaha sarve. All the gods on that are pitaha. All the gods are fastened. In other words, all of our experiences are based on that from which our life comes, that by which it is sustained, and that into which it all disappears. All of our experiences throughout our life are based on that one reality, which is the foundation of our arriving on this scene, being maintained here in this world, and into which we'll eventually go. Everything is founded on that. Taduna tyeti kaschana, no one can go beyond this. We're all in that mode. One cannot go beyond. Etadvaita, that is that. That means that is the question that Nachiketas was asking. Where, when a person dies, some say he exists, some say he no longer exists. So where is it that person came from, that from which that person came, that which maintains them while they are alive, and that into which they disappear when they go? That is that on which this whole universe, this whole experience is based. And nothing, no one can get beyond that. That is the core, the essence of everything. And what is that? That is that infinite existence, that infinite reality, that infinite consciousness, that which maintains everything, which supports everything, which is the essence of everything. And can that be experienced? Yes, it can be experienced. And what is the idea of meditation? The idea of meditation is to quieten the outgoing tendencies so that that which is can be revealed. You're not manufacturing anything in meditation. You're not doing anything. You are quieting the vrittis. You are, this is a lake, the lake of your mind. The wind is blowing and the lake is choppy. You're quieting that. When that is quieted, that which is within the, that is within our mind, that which is the reality within the lake, the truth that is at the bottom of the lake, which was hidden because we could not see it due to the motion of the water on the surface. When that motion stops, then what is in that lake reveals itself. We don't create it, we don't manufacture it. We're not able to see what is actually there, that's all. And to see it, that is the spiritual practice. To see it, to quieten the waves of the mind, to quieten the waves in that lake, then what is the reality manifests itself. And you don't have to go to any scriptures, you don't have to go to any lectures, you don't have to go to anything further. That reality manifests itself within, and you understand what is what, where you have come from, where we, what sustains us, and where we will eventually disappear.